I would like to invite the three speakers from the today afternoon. I would like to invite Justin R., Chris Muyunda, and Dr. Joe Cortez to be here at the panel. And also, I want to remind you to fill the evaluation sheet that you have inside your folder, and then you can leave outside to improve the next symposium for next year. Where is Chris Muyunda? Joe Cortez, Chris Muyunda, and Justin are here in the panel. And now I'm going to invite Gary Mankvold. He's the Associate Professor of Plant Pathology and Seed Science Endowed Chair. He's going to be the moderator during this afternoon discussion. Thank you, Gary.
Well, thank you for the warm reception, and thank you also for staying to the end for what I think will be a really interesting discussion with our speakers from the afternoon. And I think when Jeff asked me to moderate the panel discussion, he did that in order to try to help educate me. He may know that I'm probably the only Seed Science Center member who has never been to Africa, so I really learned a lot this afternoon. I thought we had excellent speakers who really helped help me to understand the situation in Africa much better than I did before, so I really appreciated that. And also, I'm pleased to have join our panel discussion up here this afternoon, Dr. Agnes Mwangambi. She's also a professor of plant pathology, like I am, and she's also the head of the College of Agriculture and Veterinary Sciences at the University of Nairobi. And she's been working very closely with Joe and Adelaida and all the other partners on the SEMIS project in Africa. And I would really like to invite her to take the podium for a few minutes to start our discussion and talk a little bit about that project and her role. So please welcome Dr. Mwangambi.
Thank you very much. I'll take about 5 minutes of your time to say just a little bit about the institute which we are focusing with. We are focusing on with respect to our collaboration with Iowa State University. The institute, we have codenamed it SEMIS, and it will be based in short is SEMIS, but in full is Seed Enterprise Management Institute. This will be based in the University of Nairobi, but specifically College of Agriculture and Veterinary Sciences, the college which I head. University of Nairobi is made up of 6 colleges, and the one I head is one of them. I think I want to start off by first of all thanking AGRA, represented here by Dr. Joe DeVries, for the foresighting as well as finding it fit to support University of Nairobi and also bringing on board Iowa State University. We also have collaboration with CIMIT through John McRobert, who is not here. We also have another very enlightened lady with respect to business issues and specifically seed issues, that is Aline Fang. I think she was mentioned earlier. She'll be working with us in this program. She's from USA. And this program is focusing on capacity building with respect to seed issues. And I think I would like to indicate that we are not, our immediate focus is not long-term training. We are looking at building competences or skills of the key players in the industry. And some of them are people who will be starters with no kind of any knowledge or who are already working with AGRA, but we shall be focusing on how to help them build skills. And we have identified six course modules. I'd like just to list them. Seed production is one of them. Seed drying, processing, and storage is another. Number three, seed quality assurance. Number four, seed legislation and accreditation. Number five, seed enterprise development. Number six, seed marketing. I think as a team, one of the key activities we had to undertake was to quickly build up the team to ensure that this takes off. So we have already had our initial meetings. We have defined these courses, and some of these meetings took place in the University of Nairobi. We were lucky to have Majid over, Joe Cortez. Alan came over later, Aline. We've had a lot of interaction, and this took place in a span of less than a month. I saw a lot of commitment from the team, and I want to assure all that we are, from where I'm standing, I think we are all ready for the job. I am accompanied here by three other colleagues who are also team members. Florence Olbayo, she's somewhere there, she can wave. There's Njoroge Kiarie, and then James Mudhomi, one of the team members from the other side of University of Nairobi. What is our core focus? We are going to focus on some of the things which have already been discussed here today and also partly yesterday. We are looking at issues breeder to foundation seed, and we want to use some of our own seed which has been bred either at the University of Nairobi or even other breeders to access the facility. Foundation seed to producers, then seed producers to outgrowers, seed quality agency to seed producers to dealers, and then dealers to farmers. What is our overall focus on this program? I still want to touch base. I think we've all talked about issues of food security and poverty being very key. We are all very familiar with the Millennium Development Goals. I, as an agriculturist, one of the challenges at the time when these Millennium Development Goals came, I think we looked at 2015 looking very far. But at the moment, when you look at it, it is just at the corner. Then when I look at those statistics, some of them we have just been given here, that instead of us moving away or improving on the situation of poverty and food security, the numbers are becoming bigger. And the sub-Saharan Africa is no exception. And with other factors coming into being, climate change and its impact on agriculture, these are real issues we are talking about. Those of us who are in the program, we need to focus on how the farmers can access this high-quality seed of the best varieties which have been bred for these regions at the right time, and more so, at affordable prices. This is what we are looking at. Because we know we are dealing with small-scale farmers whose purchasing power is very low. And that is the challenge. I wish to thank you all for listening to me with those very few remarks. I was not scheduled to talk, and I would not wish to continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your comments. And if you do have some other questions you'd like to write down, then please do so, or you can use the microphones to step up and ask some additional questions.
This question is for Justin. Justin, you in your PowerPoint presentation, you said buy-in from policymakers and relevant stakeholders is weak in Africa. I think that's what I wrote down. Mm-hmm. And then you a little later in another PowerPoint, you said there is increasing support to test biotech in several countries. Now, my question is, to me, this means political support or political buy-in, because it seems to me it's a lack of will, political will, in many places in the world, not only Africa, but particularly in Africa. But when you said there is increasing support, what is the difference between countries? Why is there support increasing in some countries and not in other ones, in your view?
Yeah. And make sure that you have the microphone close by so everyone can hear you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. It really depends on its government in the country. Some have the political will to domesticate or to try to move forward the biotechnology, and some are really lagging behind. They don't know what to do But what I mean by the increasing support is technical support. There are some projects like YIRMA, which is an insect resistance maize for Africa, water efficient maize for Africa. To cut short the long explanation, it really depends on its country, and this is why this regional approach is very important, so that the country would move at the same pace in terms of biotechnology in general.
Thank you. I have a couple questions please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Karg, and I work for Lutheran World Relief. At LWR, we work with a number of farmer-run seed companies, as well as farmers who are involved in basically seed transfer. But I think your name is... I missed your name.
Agnes Mogami.
Agnes. You mentioned one of the key challenges that we face, which is around breeder seeds. A lot of the research institutes that we work with don't have enough capacity to produce breeder and foundation seeds for our farmers to link to help multiply and disseminate the technology within the community. So I have a question that's both one of capacity. It sounds like the SEMES program is looking at that issue of capacity. Could you speak about what might be going on in other regions of Africa? And then the second question is about the regulatory environment. If there are regulatory frameworks that speak to specific commodities and varieties that are free for dissemination within these different regional or sub-regional groupings, does that apply to breeder seed as well? Can trade, transboundary trade of breeder seeds happen if we're working in a place with low breeder seed and foundation seed capacity?
Agnes, you want to take a stab at that one?
Well, I'll take a try at that, but maybe anybody in the panel can help out. I think I start off with the challenge of breeder seed, foundation seed, and whatever we have. Many times the breeders do their work, and I think once they publish their papers and so on, they are comfortable. And it's like the story is left. So it's one of those things where we say technology is still on the shelf, not moving quite to the farmers. And we, in some countries where we have very active civil societies, they have tried even to organize farmers to get some of this seed, regardless, to see how it can get out and so on. But at the same time, one of the things the SEMES will deal with is we are going to deal with those aspects. How do you, the issue, try to separate breeder seed? And like I said, in SEMES, we are going to use specifically, we already have these dry beans. We are going to use as some of our breeders have developed that seed and want to use it to develop, to train, and get through that. And then we are linking this up to get the foundation seed to the seed companies, and some of them we are already signing up with them to move that process. But there will be a training component on what is all this. Now, at the level of foundation seed, in countries where there are very clear regulatory mechanisms, and I would like to use Kenya as an example, we need to embed in KEFIS, because we can't move this farmer, this foundation seed, to the seed company without giving us what they call white labels. That is, they have to come in and inspect the seed, make sure issues of purity, this GOS, are they fitting, and all that. So there's that process. And we are going to train the dealers, the private seed sector, identified participants in that process, that they understand that there's a mechanism on moving the seed from this level to the next level. And then there's the other component. Once the seed company picks it up, after it has been cleared by this regulating organization in between, there's the outgrowers component, whereby the seed company might have the capacity to multiply their own seed if they have farms, or they might have to start engaging with identifying, giving very clear criteria on who is going to produce this seed, who can serve as an outgrower seed to start bulking, to be able to get into the retail market and so on. So there's that process, and we are going to deal with all that. Now, as to whether the seed can move from one country to another, I think I wish one of us here who was dealing with that component, they talked about COMESA, SADC regions, I wish they pick it up from there. But from Kenyan side, we see our maize beans selling across the greater East African component. But I will not be the most competent person to comment on that, and if one of us can pick it up. Thank you.
Okay. In terms of trade, just to indicate that the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, COMESA, most of it is a free trade area. So anything, technically anything that is produced within COMESA is supposed to go to all the neighboring countries without any hindrances. However, there are what are called non-tariff barriers. And these non-tariff barriers include issues of SPS. So presently in COMESA, what's happening is that since we haven't harmonized our seed trade regulations, at most of the borders, what the officers there are using are simply the SPS regulations for each country. And they will simply try to look at, in terms of pest and so on, they will look at it as a commodity, as an agricultural commodity. Okay, that's why this is a big problem. It's very important for us to really move forward in terms of the seed trade, regional seed trade regulations, and harmonize them. Because they are a problem now, they are a stumbling block to trade. But technically, anything that is produced in the common market for Eastern and Southern, which is the free trade area, is supposed to move. So now they are using these other rules to stop it. And it's a major problem. Joe can add that in terms of his SADC experience. Thank you. Can add to that one. Thank you.
I'll take the breeder seed movement first. Depending on what countries you're talking about, you may or may not be able to move breeder seed from one country to another. In the case of the Eastern Africa community, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, etc., Burundi, they have a catalog, okay? But that catalog is not a regional catalog. It's simply a sum of the different varieties that are sold in each country. Therefore, breeder seed of a variety that is in Tanzania cannot move into Kenya because it is not the regional catalog. If that same variety is also produced in Kenya, and that has been released in Kenya, then yes, you can move breeder seed back and forth. In the case of the SADC countries, the agreement is that if it has been released in two countries, then you can move seed across the border without any ado. That still has to be implemented, but that's the concept behind it. So yes, you can move breeder seed. You will have to continue with the phytosanitary things that are mandatory anyway. But breeder seed can be moved if it has been released in the country where you want to move it to. You mentioned something about farmer-led seed companies, seed cooperatives, and I'm hoping that you are one of the NGOs that, in fact, does help these cooperatives to become truly seed companies. And as you do that, then automatically, in my mind at least, you qualify for those people to be able to receive training at SEMI. Okay, because that, I think that was your question. How would the training be available for those kinds of people? And that's exactly the kind of training that Joe and therefore the entire team has translated, is that we want this training to be available precisely for the small to medium size companies. I think that what we want is that definition, that perhaps the one that I used, that makes it ample and that you can let many people come into the game, because they're going to be able to reach into more farmers. Okay? Does that answer both your questions? Good.
Justin, did you want to add anything?
Just to say that there's no specific rule for breeder seed. You know, even the certified seed, if it's not released in one country, cannot move it. So it's the same.
Okay. I have a question that I was thinking about. The phytosanitary regulations you were just talking about a couple of times there. And Joe, this is for you. Showed a couple slides demonstrating some of the accomplishments, but I think there's a lot more to that story. The table is really impressive with the numbers of organisms that were on phytosanitary lists, before and after they were reevaluated. I guess I'd like to hear a little more detail about how you accomplished that, and what the process was to get consensus on removing so many of those quarantine pests and pathogens from the list in the participating countries.
Okay, that's a very good question, Gary. Thank you. How was it accomplished? A lot of patience, some funding, and a lot of goodwill from many, many countries. Basically, it was bringing together representatives from the plant health departments of each one of the, let's take the SADC countries, of 15 countries, as well as representatives from the private sector, to continuous meetings to look at each one of the crops. And they provided, all of them provided, what were their quarantine pests for each one of the crops. So basically what we had to do was look at each quarantine pest that was listed by all of these 15 countries for each crop to come down to the analysis of what needed to be made. The analysis was relatively, no, it wasn't easy. It was relatively, well, yes, I'll say easy from the standpoint that after the tool was identified that would be our major tool, then it became very easy to do it. What was that major tool? It was the CABI Crop Protection Compendium. Okay, I don't know how people survived before without having that Crop Protection Compendium, but I'm very glad that today it exists. That compendium will give you everything you need to know about every single pest all around the world. It's incredibly complete. And what you do is you look at each quarantine pest, and the first thing you look at is this a seed-borne, seed-transmitted? If it's not seed-borne, it's not seed-transmitted, there's absolutely no reason for it to be on a quarantine pest list, right? So many of the quarantine pests fell over the wayside as soon as it was identified that they were not seed-borne, seed-transmitted. The second reason we would use is that pest present in the geographical area that we're talking about. If it's not present in the entire SADC area, you don't have to worry about it because you're not going to be, you move seed from Malawi to Tanzania or from Tanzania down to South Africa, and if the pest doesn't exist in that geographical area, why would you put it as a quarantine pest to move seed within that region? So, removed. Or, the pest is present in all of the 15 countries. Well, if it's present in all the 15 countries, there's no reason, absolutely, for it to be a quarantine pest. It's present, so you don't have to leave it. And the last reason was economic importance. Is this pest something that really will do some degree of damage to the agriculture of the country because it is moved from country X to country Y? And that was the last, so to speak, evaluation that was made of each quarantine pest. And at the end of that, that's how it was eventually boiled down to the quarantine pest list that you saw there by crop.
So the crop compendium obviously is the key. Was it difficult to get consensus that would be the source of information that you would agree is the authority on the presence or absence of the pests in different countries?
No, that was our tool. I think the authority came from the knowledge that each one of these plant health officials brought along with them meetings.
What I was asking is, was it difficult for them to accept that the information in the crop compendium is accurate?
Oh, that's another good question. Okay. Initially, it was kind of looked at with doubt, but when they began seeing all the different people that funded it, all the different people that contributed to it, including people from Africa, because there are people from Africa also that contributed to it, and it raised the level of credibility of that protection compendium. But that only went in combination with the knowledge that each one of these people brought to the table. Every one of them, they knew what they were talking about. These plant health officials, they're very good. They really are good in Africa, maybe better than in other countries that I have seen around the world.
Okay, thanks, Joe. I have a couple of general questions here that came from the audience, and I'm not sure if they're for anybody in particular, but both have to do with, agricultural production and food security in general in Africa. The first one is, would it not be beneficial to encourage vegetable production to complement or reduce the demand on grain production? So I don't know if anyone wants to take a stab at that, Chris or Justin, maybe you would be.
Can you go again on the question?
Would it not be beneficial to encourage vegetable production to reduce demand or complement the demand for grain production? So, I'm not sure to who this is addressed in terms of encouraging farmers to produce vegetables, but
yeah. Okay, I will. I think the big focus is really the sector, the agricultural sector. And there are several commodities you saw in my presentation. I indicated some of the commodities that have been given to us as a priority where we need to achieve results. What is also important is which sub-region of the continent you are looking at. We recently had a meeting of our farmer organizations, the East African Farmers Federation and the Southern African Confederation of Agricultural Unions, which is Southern Africa, to try and understand from them the areas where we needed to
move faster in terms of attracting investments, in terms of ensuring that the policies are appropriate for increased investment so we can have increased production. The colleagues from Eastern Africa did emphasize, you know, both grain but also horticultural production as important for them. Now, Southern Africa did put a lot of emphasis on horticulture, and they talked about the opportunities in terms of linkages to the hospitality industry in Swaziland, in South Africa, and so on. So what is really crucial here is we are dealing with a hunger problem, but we are also dealing with a poverty problem. We are also dealing with an income problem. So we definitely opportunities to be able to increase vegetable production would be quite important for the region. You know, recently when there was a big problem in Europe over the volcano, well, we had major issues in terms of, substantial numbers of our producers being affected in terms of their income because of those commodities that could not move to market. So our approach is definitely comprehensive, but obviously the emphasis on cereals in particular because of the analysis that has been done now in the Comprehensive Africa Agricultural Development Program with regard to food security is very important because we have a lot of our people who don't participate in markets. It is important that they are able to produce the commodity for themselves to be able to have something to eat. So I think that the answer is, as far as we are concerned, our approach is comprehensive because the problem is multifaceted. Thank you.
Justin? The question is, we should encourage the vegetable to reduce the grain, right? Mm-hmm. Please remember that in Africa, it has its particularity, which is we have staple food. So you cannot say that you eat a lot of vegetable and don't eat maybe maize or rice. Like, for instance, if you invite Malagasy people, even you are going to give all kinds of food but no rice, they will tell you that we don't eat anything. So it's not links such like producing this. We have to eat rice or maize, and then the vegetables come in. So it's not interdependent.
Okay. Another question that I had was related to something that came up this morning. Chris Hansen mentioned it, and I think two of the speakers this afternoon also mentioned the relatively low number of ISTA-accredited labs in Africa. And I know you mentioned a couple of the reasons, but I guess I was wondering if you had any suggestions on what ISTA might do in order to facilitate increasing the number of accredited labs in Africa, because it seems like it's part of ISTA's mission, so there are some obstacles there, and it's hard to, I'm not sure how to overcome those obstacles. So, Justin, do you want to try a stab at that one, or Joe?
In my opinion, for this seed laboratory, it should be demand-driven. It's not just saying that let's create a seed lab where there is a sufficient amount of seed to be analyzed in this lab. And again, AFSTA is aware of this lack of seed laboratory in Africa, so we are trying based on the demand from the seed company represented by the National Seed Trade Association that sometimes the public seed lab is not sufficient to handle nicely the seed analysis they required so that they have timely result and so on. So again, ISTA, I think they don't have anything really to do, maybe technical help or backstopping, but in terms of development, it would be internal development, saying the country realizes that we need it and let's do it.
Chris or Joe?
Yes, I agree with Chris. That has to be more demand-driven. If a country is going to export seed, then it will need an ISTA certificate. But if the country is not at the level of export, then there's little to gain by becoming ISTA accredited. I think they should be eventually all ISTA members so that they are following the same procedures in their testing. That is important because as we do the harmonization and they come up with standards, well, the other standards that have to be followed are not only the standards of germination and purity and moisture content, et cetera, but also the procedures. What procedures are you going to use? It's not that you can use 20 degrees centigrade indistinctly with 25 degrees centigrade if you're going to be testing maize. You have to have certain procedures that you're going to follow. Those are the ISTA procedures. So from that standpoint, I think it would be good for the countries to become ISTA members, not necessarily ISTA accredited laboratories. The same thing goes with OECD or EASCA, whatever you want to look at. In terms of OECD, there's also minimum requirements. And somehow, you know, when you look at Africa, or you look around the world, it really doesn't matter, but let's look at Africa. The countries that are further ahead in terms of their seed system are the ones that are either OECD or ISTA or a combination of both. If you look at South Africa, you look at Kenya, you look at Egypt, you look at even Zimbabwe, although Zimbabwe has fallen a little bit over the wayside. Those are the countries that have the best seed systems. Those are the ones that are, but at the same time, they're OECD and ISTA. So I don't know. Is it the chicken or the egg? I'm not sure, but I think it's something to think about.
Okay, thanks. Chris, anything to add?
I think that the colleagues have touched the key issues. You know, just to indicate that we expect that as we move forward in the continent, in the regions, to harmonize our seed systems, our seed regulations, that, you know, there can be increased dialogue between ourselves and ISTA, and maybe that will help now as, you know, because we want to get organized. So I think that it is time for ISTA to also engage, perhaps, you know, more proactively this time. Thank you.
Adelaida?
Yes, thank you, Gary. I have a question related to the enforcement of the agreements that I have asked to Joe, and also I'm worried about how is the system at COMESA for the enforcement, because the agreements and technical agreements are very nice. There are a lot of papers written, but really, if this lady wants to move seed, a variety of breeder seed, from one country to another country, they cannot do that. So the other thing is sometimes having international rules or standards like ISTA and OECD is from to outside and from outside Africa. Among Africa, sometimes it's a trade barrier. Now today, Kenya is asking for ISTA certificate for the rest of the African countries. Is that a trade barrier? Is that to go to WTO? What happened with Mozambique? Mozambique was asking for ISTA certificate for the rest of SADC Africa. Fortunately, we withdraw the regulation. So I'm still worried about the enforcement and the COMESA enforcement, ECOWAS enforcement, and really put in practice for the benefit of the farmers. Thank you.
She's my wife. I totally agree with you. I won't have dinner tonight if I don't. The enforcement is a big problem of the agreements, and we should not shy away from it, nor should we try and ignore it. We do have to do more regarding enforcement. Not only enforcement, but the actual signing. I mentioned to you here that SADC, for example, had approved the agreements, yes, but they have not yet signed. And there's a big difference in Africa between approving and signing, which I didn't know about until fairly recently. And that signing right now only covers 5 countries. 5 of the 15 countries of SADC have signed. Now we have had to move to find somebody that is going to go to each country to get the signature of the minister. That's how far we have had to go to get this accomplished. But even with the signature, the enforcement is going to be critical and crucial. It's not enough to say this is approved. We are going to have to help the variety release committees. We are going to have to help the seed certification agencies. We are going to have to help the plant health institutes to be able to comply and come up to par, all of them, so that they are all asking for the same thing and they can't start criticizing each other and saying, well, I don't believe what they did, or I don't believe what she did, et cetera, which happens a lot. So enforcement is a problem. We do need to address it. Thank you for reminding me of that, Adelaida.
We basically, in terms of the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, we have been watching what's been happening with regard to our colleagues who have been ahead of us in this game of seed trade regulations harmonization. I think there is a lot of hope that in COMESA we will move faster in terms of enforcement. And this, I think this is not misplaced hope. You have to look at the background of these organizations. Once the regulations are harmonized, this becomes a trade issue. It becomes a pure trade issue, and COMESA is a trade organization. It's for the most powerful ministers we have in COMESA are trade ministers. And they will start asking immediately after, the harmonization is completed in terms of conclusions with regard to ratification at the country level. By the way, in our case, once harmonization is done, COMESA has 19 countries. Once harmonization is done, in order to implement, we only need 7 countries to ratify. Then we move as a region. It becomes law. I think that we are prepared, mentally for this. We are, going to sensitize our customs officers and everybody at the border once we have finished the work. Because usually it's also at the border in terms of trade that you will find there is a lot of discretion and officers don't know what is new. But we have put this in our program in terms of ensuring that we do not have a lot of countries going to the COMESA court, because after this we have the COMESA court. In our case, people will start going there once it has become law. And we expect that we will move a lot faster because I think in terms of hastening trade, we are a lot more prepared than many of our colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Do we have any other questions from the audience? I think Tom.
Yes, on the theme of enforcement, I've had conversations with some African delegates of the biosafety protocol who've said, well, it's great we got a regulatory framework in place, but when it comes to getting growers to comply with the refuges and getting the seed companies to enforce like a BT refuge for insect resistance, they're hungry, they need food, they plant to the edge, and there goes the refuge. So what problems do you anticipate just in getting enforcement of critical aspects of your regulatory framework in practice?
For biotech.
For both, yeah. In terms of, I think that enforcement with regard to the farmer level, complying with all the requirements of growing a genetically modified crop, definitely we are looking at this as a huge capacity challenge. A lot of things, have to happen. We have to do a lot of investment in terms of our own extension systems to be able to assist in this regard. And obviously, this is one of the areas, really, why there is still a little bit of discomfort in terms of adoption. Because stakeholders seem to be quite clear. For example, they don't accept the use in much of the continent, the use of South Africa as a good example of an African country that has adopted. Because South Africa has a lot of capacity in terms of its extension and outreach to producers. And, you know, we are hoping, we are really looking very carefully at what is going to happen in Burkina Faso, which really represents, you know, the average African country in terms of its capacities to do things. But generally speaking, there is some investment, you know, that is required in terms of the system to be able to make sure that we are able to support our producers effectively and we do not create problems of, you know, lack of confidence in what has been approved. So the we have put in place the structures, the whole issue about having the policies approved is that we have also described the structures that need to be there at the regional level, that need to be there at the national level to be able to support this. What will be critical is to ensure that we'll be able to support those systems that we have created. Thank you.
I think one thing we need to talk about this enforcement is that we need to be patient. And this is not something like we just change it. It will be happening. And generally, we need very strong advocacy on regular basis, ongoing basis. If we don't have advocacy group to remind those policymakers or regulators in a friendly manner and in partnership, it will stay there. So this is why interested groups like the Seed Association or any seed group should join hands to do an advocacy on regular basis at national levels mainly and then at regional level and at continental level. This is why AFTA has already a memorandum of understanding with the African Union to look further in at how we should improve in general manner the seed business environment in Africa.
Yeah, I'd just like to add, I think there is certainly reason for concern, and you already know that, but even in South Africa, the compliance with BT refuge areas has been pretty weak, even in comparison to the U.S., and I would say even in the U.S., this is a challenge that's not really completely overcome yet. So I would agree, Justin, that patience will be required, but I think everybody here is aware of the importance of enforcing the biotechnology regulations, because if they're not enforced, that is going to undermine whatever acceptance there is that does develop. Question?
Yes, I think this goes a little bit to David Lambert's message on advocacy and communication during lunch, but. In Latin America, ICA has a board of directors that's composed of the 34 ag ministers, but they only meet every 2 years. And since the life of an ag minister is usually about 9 months, we end up with different people at those meetings, and they come with different agendas and so on. Where we've been getting more traction, however, is at the regional level, where in Central America or in the Southern Cone, the local or regional ag ministers get together, and they develop an agenda, and they follow that agenda almost as a group. For example, in Central America, the 7 ministers of agriculture will travel to Washington, D.C. together. They will go to Madrid together. They will go to Brasilia to see Embrapa together. And they'll focus on their regional agenda. And I think part of the success that Iowa State has had with the Central American seed harmonization efforts is that they're able to get the attention of the ministers and keep it on their agenda. I don't know if those structures exist in Africa. I don't know if there are regional structures for the ag ministers. And Chris, you also mentioned you have the trade ministers. So you've got a real puzzle to manage there. And I thought I'd just ask, what kind of regional mechanisms do you have so that you can develop this kind of a communication advocacy agenda management process for the ministers or on behalf of the ministers to keep those issues that you're dealing with front and center, and hopefully resolved as most effectively possible.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much for that contribution. Chris, just to indicate that, yes, indeed, we do have the structures, the regional structure for the for agricultural ministers. So for all the agricultural issues, such as seed regulations, harmonization, such as the biotechnology guidelines and policies at the regional level, we will first take them to our to the Committee of Ministers of Agriculture. We have one Committee of Ministers of Agriculture comprising all the 19 ministers of agriculture in COMESA. They meet once per year. Because the big focus of COMESA is on trade, the Committee of Trade Ministers is it's actually a mix of trade and foreign affairs ministers, but they comprise what is called the Council of Ministers. They are a higher level, so to say. So the structure is the heads of state, the council, and then the committees of different ministers. And for all the agricultural issues, we report to the Committee of Ministers of Agriculture. Whatever they agree has to be taken to the Council of Ministers for full implementation. Usually, there are no problems in terms of anything that has been approved by the sector ministers. In this case, the Committee of Agricultural Ministers. Once they have approved something, the trade ministers will be happy. But usually, because of implications on trade, you know, they still want to have a look at it, and maybe they can raise some questions. So the trade ministers, they meet twice per year to make sure that, you know, the trade issues are well approved. So yes, we do have those structures, and obviously over the next 2 years, as we work on the issues of seed harmonization, we are going to work very closely with our committee of ministers of agriculture. In fact, they will meet. They will meet in Swaziland from 17 to 21 May in Swaziland, and we are going to take the progress reports in terms of what we have done so far, the program we have designed for seed harmonization, and what we have in terms of biotech guidelines, what we have so far. And the agenda has already been sent to them. So we do have those systems. It's always very difficult to convince them because there are 19 of them, and there are always issues. Some countries are not convinced and so on. But we do have the committees at the regional level. Thank you.
Do you have any other questions from the audience? Okay, any final comments from the panel? I look pretty happy up here. Okay. Well, it's a little earlier than we scheduled to adjourn, but I think we'll probably be okay with everyone if we close it up at this point. I think we've had an excellent couple of days, and I'd like to one more time to thank our panel and all the speakers that we had during the course of the 2 days. I'd also like to thank Jeff Welt for taking the lead in organizing the entire symposium. It's a lot of work, and it turned out very well. I think we'd all agree. So thanks, Jeff. And then finally, I know Jeff would want me to thank Gina and the other members of the Seed Science Center staff who really were important in making sure that this happened and that it all went smoothly. So one more round of applause, please. Okay. Thank you, Adelaide. Okay, with that then, it's my pleasure to adjourn the 2010 Big Map Symposium, and thank you all again for coming.